Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle, where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games.
Big Ant Herron with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to adventnose.com to schedule your appointment. Anthony Herron can be found on Twitter at Big Ant Herron, Score postgame host, Big Ten Radio, Fox TV. He's also on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score, here on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Now, that shirt looks yellow and black. I can't see if that's an Iowa shirt.
It is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, more power to you, because I thought you'd hide. I thought after last week's embarrassment that you might not want Iowa to be top of mind, because what the hell, man?
Hey, they are, what, number 11 in the country still at this point? And, you know, when they got up to number two, I'm pretty sure I probably talked, whether we talked to Iowa last week, the week before last, but certainly all over the Big Ten Network continued to caution people, Iowa fans, football purveyors in general. It's been a very ordinary offense that's been bolstered by a sensational defense at alarming rates of taking the football away and getting it to them in striking distance, in scoring territory. So the defense, when they didn't score the football on their own, they gave the Iowa offense the ball within range to score themselves. That being said, I mean, you know, a one-loss start, number 11 in the country going into a bye after seven games, five to go, a schedule that in theory is manageable, but, you know, where the Big Ten East is the deepest division in college football this year, the best division, the Big Ten West, where Iowa plays, does have more than capable teams. Minnesota's been really beat up. Purdue was really beat up. They had a bye week before Iowa, and they got fairly healthy, especially at receiver, as we saw with David Bell, which I think a lot of NFL draft folks, you know, watch that part pretty closely. But if there's anybody with a tough defense, then it's going to be at least a close game, if not a victory, because Iowa's offense really hadn't shown itself that well.
I was very surprised by the final score and just the dominance that was shown in that game. And you mentioned the good defense and trying to have takeaways and the lackluster offense. And I don't know if I've ever heard a better parallel for the Bears football team this year, maybe last year, the year before.
Right.
But
right.
After seeing that Green Bay game where we saw the offense score even fewer points than their average, what were your main takeaways?
I mean, I think the fact that you had a run game that without David Montgomery and then without Damien Williams as well, they was able to run it as effectively as the Bears did, that's certainly a positive sign. And, you know, we've been kind of beating that drum to death for a few seasons at this point. But now with a rookie running back and Khalil Herbert to be able to come in and run with really the patience that he runs the ball with is probably the most impressive thing to me, because to have some top gear is cool. To have some forward lean and some finish to his runs is awesome. But what you can't necessarily coach or what you can't lift into a guy, you know, just in the weight room or something like that, is his vision, is his ability to sort of spot that cutback lane, but set it up effectively before getting downhill. I mean, frankly, that was one of my complaints about David Montgomery in his rookie season, where he was almost kind of too patient and didn't sort of run through the smoke and hit the hole in certain times. And he grew in that vein throughout his career. And I don't think Khalil Herbert is quite the athlete, maybe, and not quite as versatile as David Montgomery, but just stylistically, for a guy who hasn't gotten the rock very much in his NFL career yet to immediately be able to get downhill and punish guys, but also have on some of those stretch plays, those outside zone plays, the patience you need to make those plays effective. And even early in that game against Green Bay last week, cutting it all the way back against the grain and getting out into daylight and running into space. He's got some vision. He's got some patience. So, I mean, I think that for him to showcase that, the depth of the Bears tailback position that we kind of thought might have been there looking at it in training camp, that maybe, you know, we got a little worried about through the first couple of weeks, that's there. So that's an outstanding sign. I think Justin Fields had his best game of the season. I didn't realize it Sunday evening. I was talking about this the other night in Des Plaines at the Beacon Tap at our top at Miller Lite top.
Sounded like a blast, by the way.
It was so much fun. And the weather's been really agreeable in the couple of weeks we've been doing those too. So people have been out there. Of course, everybody loves to come and see Lance, and we have a really good time out there. But I didn't know immediately after the game. Like, I watch the game, I'm taking notes, I'm rewinding stuff on the DVR, head to the TV studio, and then I head over across the street and go into the station there at the score for post-post with Olin. I'm not necessarily monitoring social media that closely. I didn't realize a lot of folks like came out of the game worried about Justin Fields. I think it's the best game he's played so far this season. He has yet to look. That's the most comfortable and the most decisive that Justin Fields has been at any point in his Bears career. And he threw a lot of really pretty passes and made a lot of decisions that I completely agreed with. So overall, the offense only scores 14 points. So that's not good enough for like Matt Nagy 4 or 5 years into this, and Ryan Pace 7 years into this. But as far as the young talent on this squad and what we saw on that stage against a really good team, we're going to see him tested again against the defending Super Bowl champs. I left really encouraged for Chicago.
He knows how to miss a throw, too. And he's throwing into a lot of tight windows.
Right.
If you look at PFF and Next Gen and all this stuff, I think he's leading all of the NFL, the number of tight windows into which he throws. There's going to be picks in there. They're going to happen. But I do like where he tries to put a ball where only his receiver can get it, that he's going to be the only guy who has the shot.
And you don't want to discourage the interceptions too much, right? I mean, there's a balance for that because you are in the midst of a season with a lot of veterans on the squad and a coach and a general manager who've been around for a while where you want to value winning, which means you do want to value the football. And so that continues to be, I think, a part of that balance that Matt Nagy will have to strike where, yeah, your rookie's on the field now and you're using what I do believe is finally kind of the best offensive approach that suits him and this offensive line. That being said, now we're seeing shot plays. Now we're seeing an attack mode. Sometimes it's of a call variety. What I love, though, was that we're seeing in multiple games now. And he obviously hadn't started a lot of football games yet, so we didn't see it at all in Cleveland because it wasn't available to him. We didn't see it in Las Vegas. And the thing I love that we didn't see much attack mode in Vegas is because that was what proved to me. I talked to you guys about this last week. It proved to me that everyone's bought in on this identity, this complementary football approach where they said, you know what? We don't need to put things in harm's way to get the win. But then what we saw against Detroit with some attack throws showed up again against the Green Bay Packers, but they weren't all called attack throws. Some of them were. The questionable situation that should have been a flag from Green Bay in the first half. He's trying to go up 2 scores. They're up 7-0. He sees a defensive lineman jump off sides. He goes into attack mode, and yes, it's a sight adjustment, a misread, but he's thinking, I got a free play. He throws it down there later in the first half where he's extending the play. It was very similar to the moment from the semifinal playoff game that he lost against Clemson in his junior season. For anyone who's an Ohio State fan remembers the moment I'm talking about, where he and Chris Olave, in the midst of the play, he's anticipating Olave's going to make a sight adjustment where Olave starts on a post route and then breaks towards the outside, makes it a poco, a post corner, where Olave breaks towards the corner, Fields with anticipation cuts it loose, thinking Olave staying towards the post. They just misread them. They read the moment differently. A very similar thing with Allen Robinson, where on that interception towards the end of the first, or the interception that was not towards the end of the first half, where Adrian Amos almost picked it off, where Fields is extending the play laterally, and he's thinking, A-Rob is now reverse pivoting. He's going to work towards the back corner of the end zone. That's where Justin Fields floats the football. There's an attack mentality to this passing attack and the ability to threaten defenses deep that we just haven't seen from any other quarterback under Matt Nagy. So that, in addition to those darts he's throwing on outcuts and the BBs he's throwing in between defenders, both in, you know, between the hashes and up the rails, there was so much to be excited about in that game from Justin Fields. And we saw just an inkling of some of that mobility that I know both of you were very excited about. We haven't seen much of it yet, and I think there's a few specific reasons why we haven't.
I like that we have both Justin Fields and Justin Inkling. They're both good.
Yes, yes, both are exceptional talents, if you ask me. But I think we're starting to see that. We're going to need to see that even more, that mobility unleashed against Tampa Bay.
Okay, so you mentioned the specific reasons. I also want to just say this right now. That was not my phone who just played Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball.
Okay, it was,
that was Dan.
It was my. I got a text from Shane, and I didn't know what it was. And it was Shane saying that he wants to swing the Crusader sword, and it was a picture of him swinging a sledgehammer with Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball in the background. And I didn't know that my volume was up that high because I had my earbuds in earlier and I had unplugged them.
And Sledgehammer was a return cut.
What is the oddest ringtone that either of you have? Well, because I don't really have ringtones.
My phone is never on a ring. It's always on vibrate. Always.
Yeah, right. Mine doesn't ring either. And anybody who's not in my contacts, it automatically rings to voicemail.
But I thought Wrecking Ball was what we just heard on your
It was, but it was because it was a video that Shane sent.
Oh, okay. Okay, that doesn't count as a ring.
It wasn't a ring.
I got you.
But I know people are going to assume it was me with the Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball, but I would never.
Of course.
I would never. Okay, you mentioned the need to see Justin Fields run more. We've talked about the need for design runs, the need to move this pocket. We have not seen that as much as we've wanted to yet. What are your specific reasons why? Expand on this.
We saw more of the called sprint and boot action the other day. Part of what happened was that the Bears didn't have the ball a whole lot in the second half of the game last week against Green Bay. But as a percentage of overall snaps, and I haven't gone and run the numbers, just my impression coming out of the game and the notes I'm taking, I did see more consistency. Like I didn't see as much moving of the pocket against Vegas as I would have liked. Really didn't see hardly any of it against Detroit. In a game where overall there was some good offensive signs, was, you know, still earlier in his development or whatever, I saw more of that. I saw more called sprint, more called boot in the overall kind of totality of the amount of pass plays the Bears ran. Justin Fields, as a true runner, though, I think in addition to making sure you've got some sprint and some boot called to move the pocket, I think some true QB run should be a part of the game plan against Tampa Bay this week as well. And, you know, I just want to hold off a little bit and get into specifically breaking down the upcoming matchup. But I believe that because it takes not only the physical pressure off of the pass protection, but also the mental pressure off of a young quarterback where he gets an opportunity to exhale on occasion. This is one of the biggest complaints I had during much of Mitch's time here, where it's obvious Trubisky's eggs would just get scrambled throughout a game with everything that he was being tasked with trying to figure out from within the pocket. And Justin Fields, you know, his acumen is beyond what Mitch's was, certainly at this point as a rookie in comparing to Mitch's rookie season. But then I think to still give him a blow here where you just say, you know what, get on the move, read half the field, read a quarter of the field, and if you don't like it, then just take off and run. It alleviates some of the weight off your pass pro, and it alleviates that mental pressure from a quarterback too, and it adjusts the launch point for the defense. But in addition to that, though, actually call some true run plays for Justin Fields, because he's not my old teammate Mike Vick. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not one of these very sort of sudden, shifty kind of quarterbacks that just kind of makes it happen at the blink of an eye. But he does have that amazing straight line speed. He will be a more than capable runner during his NFL career, just in a different manner. And this is what I'm trying to remind folks of, you know, since he was even before he got drafted to Chicago. He's not one of those guys, just an electrifying runner. His college highlights don't necessarily show that. He's got an amazingly accurate deep pass, and he does have blazing straight line speed where there are plenty of run highlights available to him, but he's not one of these guys who you can just count on him second reaction wise to, you know, break a defender down in the hole and rip off some big run like he's Barry Sanders.
All this folds in nicely to what I'm going to get to start the next segment. And I don't know if you heard it or not, I've got an offensive game plan for the Bears, and you will assess the validity of this strategy when we come back. And I want
you to. It's going to come in like a wrecking ball.
I want you to be completely honest about it, but just keep an open mind and tell me if you think it makes any sense when we come back. Is that cool?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, more with Anthony Herron straight ahead. I'm Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score. Talking football with Anthony Herron as we do on Thursdays. It is the Bears and the Bucks, the late game Sunday. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. All right, Anthony, this came to me last night in that sort of liminal space in between sleep and being awake and just about to fall asleep. And I had to write it down because I sort of had a vision after watching the Tennessee Titans.
And if you don't write it down in that moment, are you going to not be able to sleep? Because I get that.
Sometimes
like, there's something there.
Yeah, or it'll manifest itself differently and I'll get some sort of like perverted version of it in a bizarre dream that haunts me.
But forget it. That's what happens.
But in this case, I saw the Tennessee Titans run legitimate, real power offense. Mm-hmm. Bringing the fat guys around and allowing things to take a little time to develop. And when I see the way this sets up against Tampa Bay, just hear me out here. I'm already defensive about this because I'm insecure about my football knowledge in the presence of Anthony Heron. But Vita Vea is no fun. And Ndamukong Suh is no fun. And I want to get away from them as quickly as I can and make them chase and tire them out and have them sucking for wind at the end of the game. Mm. If the Bears were to be patient with that kind of true power run game. I'm talking G lead sweeps, outside zone with trapping actions on the back end, and we're patient with it and dedicated to it. Not only do you force a depleted secondary, if you have the math, you're forcing them to come up repeatedly and tackle and play physically. Forget the coverage for a second. Let Allen Robinson go block a little bit. Let them you've got an extra hat out there if you get it right. Make them tackle over and over and over again. And then everything you were talking about the half field reads and letting Justin Fields do some things can come on the backside, on the other side of that. What say you to that as the basis for a complementary offensive plan?
I don't dislike it. I don't. Okay. The only issue I would have with it is if for some reason your defense isn't necessarily keeping you in the game against all those Tampa Bay weapons. Now, your approach can potentially limit possessions and get time of possession in your favor if you are having some success running the football. If you're ending up at 3rd and 9 and then you're off the field punting the football consistently with that approach, kind of ramming your head against the wall, then you know you're setting yourself up into a pretty difficult circumstance where now you've got Jason Pierre-Paul over there chasing Justin Fields all over the field because he's down multiple scores and you got to throw the football. So I think there's a balance to that. I don't think you want to just ram your head against a brick wall because you don't have Derrick Henry and you don't have that Titans offensive line, but you do have an O-line that has been effective in running the football. So where I have heard some commentary about like, basically you got to abandon the run game, I don't think you can go in and do that.
No.
Because you're not the Rams, because you're not the Chiefs, because you're not the Buccaneers. You don't have that available to you in your passing attack. So you need to seek balance. What I also believe you need to seek, though, is the shot play, is those attack opportunities against a beleaguered secondary. So potentially ramming your head against a brick wall with that front seven, maybe the best in football, you're not looking to take advantage of what lacks for them on the back end. That linebacker core, that defensive line, there's a reason the secondary hasn't been exposed yet because they're so good up front. But when it's there, when you can find those opportunities, they're just so beat up back there. You have to attack that. You have to seek the weakness in the opponent. So, I don't want to see Justin Fields attempting 40-plus passes in this game, but do I want to see them come out and occasionally throw on first down in the first half? Yeah, in a blend with a lot of Alex Bars and hopefully J.P. Holtz. My guy is healthy and he's able to be on the field as well. I want to see some heavy packages and I want to see them not necessarily just acquiesce the run game before they've even attempted it, but I do want to see some blended in potential, especially I'm assuming Matt Nagy and Bill Lazor looking at the same film I did. Justin Fields threw the ball really well last week. And if you feel like what you can set up with Allen Robinson and with Darnell Mooney, maybe with some of your tight ends, shrug. But if those opportunities are available to you, you need to try and attack their secondary with that as well.
That's what I was going to ask. I think the logical follow-up is, do you think that because they've decided to start passing more on first down, this is taking away those shot opportunities, which I would like to see on a second down, per se?
I don't believe it completely takes them away. It's about, kind of the timing and sequencing is a word I've used so much while Matt Nagy was calling the plays. And, now it's not Nagy, it's Lazor, but the same question will still sort of survive until we see wide open receivers, until we see touchdown passes that look like they were set up based off of what happened previously in the game with the Bears. You know, Jalen Hurts with his mobility for the Eagles last week, that opened up run lanes for their tailbacks. So I don't think it's all heavy packages, but I do believe that calling runs for Justin Fields, like I'm, you know, was mentioning in the earlier segment, that should give Khalil Herbert some additional opportunities. But I agree. You don't completely abandon the tailback portion of your run game, and you do take your shots because their secondary is so banged up. And if you can do those things, there's no reason to think that since you have Allen Robinson, that he can't have a big game. Since you have Darnell Mooney, that combination, you know, it's not going to be Evans and Brown, but the Bears version of it where you have guys who seem to be more than capable playmakers. Certainly Allen Robinson has proven that up to this point in his career, and limit the opportunities that a Jason Pierre-Paul will have one-on-one against your offensive tackles.
Let me give you some facts, and then you tell me what they mean regarding how you plan for this and what it says for what the Bears should do. This is from Next Gen Stats. Tom Brady was at his best in Week 6 on pass attempts when he got rid of the ball in under 2.5 seconds. On quick passes, he finished 24 of 25 for 179 yards and a plus 16.1% completion percentage above average, with the second quickest time to throw this week, trailing only Mac Jones. So far this season, Brady has an average time to throw of 2.53 seconds, which is third quickest in the NFL, and that's helped him excel on play action. He's been 10 of 12 for 116 yards and two touchdowns last week, including a CPOE, completion percentage above expectation, of 14%. Knowing that, what can you do about it?
In theory, that plays into where the Bears' strength has been up to this point in the season. You know, we can still hold out hope that maybe Robert Quinn will be able to be added back to the roster if he's able to, you know, test negative a couple of times between now and then. If no Robert Quinn, then obviously that does sap the pass rush and the potential you have to just get there with four, like they've been able to do really effectively this season. But just like we saw in the game they played against Tampa Bay last season, pressuring Brady with four has always been your best hope for survival. It's the plan that most teams try to go in with. Not everyone has a front four or a deep rotation that can make that happen, because the way Tampa Bay operates offensively, they will supplement, you know, Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette's running abilities with that short and quick passing attack. Even though Rob Gronkowski hasn't been in, you got O.J. Howard, a really gifted tight end out of Alabama, who's coming off a big game also. But when Brady is able to not only just make quick decisions, but comfortably get the ball out of his hands quickly, then yes, that is where he's at his most comfortable. And even at this advanced stage in his career, when he's got a clean pocket, he can still deliver the football deep. But that's been the book on Brady since college. You know, like the photo that got posted on Twitter a couple moments ago, me sacking Brady back in Michigan. Yep. It was about, keep running the hoop. He's not going to run away from you. Just get upfield and keep working. And if he holds the football, you're going to get home. If he doesn't hold the football, then he knew exactly what we were in, and he's going to be accurate with it.
He was just terrified of your giant shoulder pads. He just thought that it was an anthropomorphized set of shoulder pads running at him.
And I do think that there were several quarterbacks who got crushed by my shoulder pads in college who were never heard from again. Tom Brady, I suppose there's tangible evidence that he was able to go on and be productive afterwards. But for the Bears defense, the fact that they don't need to blitz, but they can, I'm looking forward to that chess match between Sean Desai and Tom Brady. What the Bears defensive coordinator can do to try and just see if you stymie a little bit what Tampa Bay brings to the table. Because if you get Mac rolling, and especially if Quinn is there as well, doesn't look to me like, from the way Akeem Hicks had to leave the field the other day, I'd be surprised if he's able to play in the game. But I don't necessarily need to see like a bunch of tackles from Eddie Goldman or Angelo Blackson. Just eat up blocks, man. Just get a bunch of two for ones and make sure you force Tampa Bay to be as one dimensional as possible. And then from there, you can get Mario Edwards, who, yes, he has some personal fouls and whatnot, but the dude rushes the quarterback at a high level. You need him on the field. You want to see if Brady gets frustrated enough to mush him in the face too, because it means you're taking him down to the ground. Get those pass rushes out there. Get those racehorses rolling. But I need to see the interior of that Bears offensive line because the Bears defensive line, because Tampa Bay, they're not a very lateral. They're not a very exterior sort of rushing attack. It's going to happen between the tackles. So you got to shore that up. Make sure you eat up as many blocks as possible so Roquan and Alec and Danny just feel like they can feast on what's happening on the interior.
And as a player, what did you think of Jalen Johnson's posting of the fine that the Bears levied him for $2,745 for being what he said was a minute late to practice?
It's late. I mean, you know, football time is fairly similar everywhere. Like, being on time is usually at least, you know, theoretically considered late in most football situations. So being legitimately 1 minute late, he was probably really a good, like, 10 minutes late in football time anyway. So, I mean, you know, I would assume Jalen Johnson, while he doesn't love giving up $2,700, I think between that, between, you know, whether it's the Jimmy Graham tweet from earlier in the season, whether it was, you know, I got to talk with our guy Lance Briggs on Tuesday night about Eddie Jackson on Twitter. I don't know that there's a lot of depth to the thought that goes into what's happening on social media.
That's
from
a
some
very
of these guys.
Nice way of putting it.
God, I don't think they're like over there just like ripping off the heads of dolls and smearing pig's blood on the wall because they're so ticked off about what's going on. I think they're just doing goofy things on Twitter in the midst of whatever their busy professional athlete days are.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I want to ask you, you were hosting with Lance. It has gotten a lot of traction, and this is not the first time Lance or his partner Alex Brown has called out Eddie Jackson this season. Right. So what do you make of all of that, and what was your take of Lance's discussion with it? Because we heard a little bit of the show.
I thought it was a very, you know, unsurprisingly mature discussion that Lance had about it. And because when it comes down to it, obviously his gig, same as my gig, is you go on the air afterwards, you break down what you see. Lance is one of the great Bears of all time. There's weight that comes and credibility that comes with him describing things. And in the end, he didn't say anything real incendiary about Eddie Jackson. Said Eddie Jackson needs to make that tackle in a key moment. And he does. It's really that pure and that clear. And I don't think, you know, I doubt Eddie's sitting around thinking, you know what, I don't need to make that tackle. I do believe that, you know, whatever level of rabbit ears there may be from Eddie Jackson, where he's heard a lot of that noise, a lot of that chatter, I do try to provide some balance to that because, you know, just taking Eddie Jackson off the field, that would hamper the Bears' secondary. There are things that Eddie Jackson does in coverage that many safeties in the NFL wouldn't even be asked to do. That being said, he's not playing like one of the top five safeties in football, but that's how he's getting paid. So he's got the privilege of those expectations that come with the way he performed earlier in his career and the way he's being paid and compensated in the National Football League. Lance Briggs knows exactly what that's about. He's been one of those guys where you get the big contract, you earn the big contract, and now folks expect you to perform like one of the best in the business week in and week out. So whether you're talking Khalil Mack or last season Robert Quinn, or pretty soon the not-too-distant future it'll be Roquan Smith, whoever it is right now at the moment, it's Eddie Jackson, where the crosshairs are trained on his performance really for a couple of seasons now. And there are things that are more difficult to notice that Eddie Jackson still does at a very high level. But in the end, the reason he's being paid so much money is because he had a historic start to his career making plays on the football, and they're just non-existent at this point. And they need to return for this defense to flourish in the way that they seemingly can.
Hear, hear. Anthony Heron, thank you.
Preach.
You got it. Enjoy the game.
Try.
Shoulder pads up.
We will try. That is Anthony Heron. And when we come back, we've got a former Chicago athlete having a rough one and making no apologies for it. It's next on The Score.
To the ground out by Bregman, and that one's down the line into left. What a night. Alvarez has delivered again. Two more runs will score off his bat. He's driven in all three, and it's 3-0 Astros here in the sixth. On its way home, and a ground ball right side. Gurriel to the bag, and the Astros take game five and lead this best of seven series 3-2.
I was good for five, and I sucked for one. I had to leave everything out there. Told myself coming into this game I had a job to do, and obviously didn't get it done, but I left my out there on that mound tonight. That's for damn sure.
Big ol' yar.
Yar! That's like multiple yars on that one. You're going to leave those on the mound.
Do you know what that song is? That is Back That Thing Up by Juvenile and the Cash Machine. funny voice taking over for the 9-9 in the 2000. Breaking killing it today. Chris Sale said that after the game last night. I lost it. Good. I was like, we're using this.
Good for five. Sucked for one. All right.
You know what happened? He got left in a third time through the order. Dang it.
Amazing how, despite the fact that people are like, oh, those analytics people and all that, and see what the game's become. Yeah.
It
matters.
Me. I'm like, yeah, you can leave Lance Lynn in a third time through the order. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Is it? And I also was like, what do you guys have to say when the Red Sox beat the Astros in the ALCS? And I'm not so sure.
Well, it's hard to be sure now because both the Astros and the Braves are a win away from advancing to the World Series that no one will watch.
That series, the ALCS, you could argue, turned on one blown strike call.
Yeah, you can.
That is atrocious.
If you actually trace back that explosive inning that they had, and that would
seven run ninth with two outs,
that would not have happened had they gotten a call right.
That is ridiculous. I'm so tired of umps being such a huge part of the game that we're talking about this in this manner.
Maybe they should prevent the umps with bad strike zones from calling games in the playoffs. We know who's good. We know who's bad. They've got a 162 or a career of work. And we know that guys like Angel Hernandez and Laz Diaz and maybe even Tom Hallion should cede the floor to guys who are better at it. Would that be so bad? Is that an umpire union thing that we actually have to cycle through crews based on a system that we've just had for some just because?
Well, think about how Aaron Boone treated the young umpire when he said those are savages in the box. Like there's this whole.
Or the guy to start this year. What was his name? Eric. The kid, the 33-year-old kid.
That's what I'm talking
about. Who they were just all over earlier this year.
Yeah, and so to me, is any of it correct and okay? And that's kind of where I go back to with all of this.
And we know that the robot umps have been doing poorly themselves in all the testing that's done in the Atlantic League elsewhere. They've not gotten a lot of positive results there.
I am also a firm believer that if there were more consistent strike zones, you would have quicker games.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Because the pitcher's not trying to find the strike zone. The hitters aren't trying to find the strike zone. There's no discussions about it. Batters aren't calling time as much because they know where it is. Pitchers aren't taking as long between each pitch because they know where it is. Consistency is key.
Anything that keeps the games from being 5 hours, I am absolutely for.
And when they were trying to eliminate the human element to begin with instant replay, isn't it just common sense to attribute it to the robot umpire, to a consistent strike zone, just so it's always right? If you're trying to get everything right,
then
he's here.
The strike zone right.
But the other thing too, and sorry to cut you off, is that, you know, it's been mentioned before on this station that if the ball gets by the catcher and it hits the robot umpire, how do you do that? Like, how do you deal with that situation?
Yeah,
dust it off and put it back out there.
Well, this was the Les Grobstein plan. What if it rains? What if it short circuits the robot umpire?
Now we're sounding like a bad 80s movie. Your mama was a snowblower. No, that is the movie Short Circuit. Okay, but going back to this.
Making reference to Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I didn't know that.
Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries.
I do remember you talking about that. But all of this just goes back to one major key here. There needs to be more umpire accountability, period. Human umpire accountability. And there's this huge match going on, and you know what word I omitted, between the umpires union, Major League Baseball 2, and the players union. And I wonder if all of this comes to some sort of point in the 2021 CBA, because this is not okay. There needs to be more umpire accountability, especially when it comes to strike zones. It's like, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. The strike zone's going to be hell. No, that's not how this should work.
I just picture Short Circuit being like a rite of passage in the Rahimi household.
Where
everybody's an electrical engineer. It's like, kids, you are old enough that tonight we are watching Short Circuit.
Actually, the movie that was like that, and you're going to laugh, was the TV movie Not Without My Daughter, because it was like the first time that any of us saw Farsi being spoken in an American movie.
Really?
And then my dad was like, well, isn't he Afghan? Is he really speaking the proper Farsi?
Good.
And there was like a famous line in there where he says, "Dorugmige," which means like he's lying or she's lying or something. And then it Yes. But Short Circuit was a mandatory among me and the cousins. Absolutely.
See, in our house, it's pretty much just Three Amigos. And then we, you know, once we laid down the groundwork with, although for him, it was Slapshot when he was 8 or 9.
Three Amigos is great.
Yeah. Three Amigos is important. And even though I know he's been like mostly canceled, I have to raise my kids understanding why the jokes in Love and Death are funny and how they work, and that make just at least say what you want. Have at me when it comes to Woody Allen. I know he's probably a creep, and there are even things in that movie that are creepy. It is still the funniest movie ever made. And I'll die on that hill.
I don't know. And I had an interesting conversation with Herb about Grandma's Boy and the greatness that movie is, but that's probably not for these airwaves.
Transition is, it's next on The Score.
The robot things, they'll malfunction just as much as human beings do.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.